Welcome back. I'm Peter Wood, and I'm the author of Mud Between Your Toes, A Rhodesian Farm, which is a memoir about my life growing up in Zimbabwe, or formerly Rhodesia, in the 1960s and 70s. This is a podcast about family, independence, loss, and above all, identity. In today's episode, I'm going to read from the first chapter of my book, I Am an African, but I want to keep it smooth and flowing, so there are going to be a few segues and a few tangents and a few stories that I suddenly remembered along the way. You might also find a few dogs barking in between. This is being recorded from the terrace of my flat overlooking the Sai Kung Hills in Hong Kong. And the village dogs, well, they just never stop barking. But that's life. So here we go. I am an African. Standing on either side of me, hands gripped firmly on my shoulders, the two well-built South African immigration officers pulled me from the queue to the side of the room. "What are you?" one of them asked. God, the question took me by surprise. I'm used to being asked, who am I, but what am I? I looked up at them, hoping my face showed a mixture of confusion and innocence. This was my game face when I went through immigrations around the world. Of course, it never worked, but I kept trying. And they didn't smile. What am I? As I said, it wasn't a question that readily springs to mind.
I don't think I follow you, officer. I was beginning to stammer. And his hand weighed like a Virginia ham on my shoulder.
His fingers tightened. Honestly, it wasn't a friendly gesture. They had singled me out from all the other passengers. Bugger it, fuck it, I thought. A lifetime of being treated like an alien, a pariah at border posts around the world. And now I had my new Hong Kong passport and it was all happening again. You can see why I felt a little bit twitchy. And the queues of tired, irritable passengers across the room suddenly felt very distant. My escape route through immigration now appeared less than certain. I caught the eye of a woman I recognized from the flight. She looked pale, ashen under the harsh strip lights. Quickly, she dropped her gaze. Meanwhile, the ham on my shoulder tightened its grip. I pondered his question. What the hell am I? I mean, really, what am I? Well, let's try. I'm male, middle-aged, gay, Caucasian. Oh, I'm also Chinese and an African to boot. But of course you understand. What are you? Please forgive me my Zulu accent. I haven't spoken it in a long time. Well, yes, of course, you see. I looked around me as if it was perfectly obvious. I waved my passport. Look, I'm Chinese. Look, it says there on the passport. Well, not so much Chinese, I shrugged, but more Hong Kongese. I smiled, a weak, rather pointless smile. They stared. They shook their heads. Somehow that tiny head-shaking gesture made the moment seem almost sinister, like a leopard twitching its tail just before pouncing. This wasn't looking good. Chinese? Impossible, the other man said. You're white, and look right there, it clearly says you were born in Zimbabwe. The first man wagged a stumpy finger at me and pursed his lips in a rather effeminate manner.
So, I will say this one more time.
He leaned down until his face was inches from mine. I could smell his morning brew on his breath.
What are you?
It says nationality Chinese. He looked me up and down. But you are not Chinese, so tell me, what are you? Well, yes, I answered, stifling a groan. Look, I've tried to explain. It's complicated.
Invariably, this would result in a rolling of the eyes and a shake of the head and a deep sigh.
How complicated. Please humour me. I have all day, Mr. Wood.
Or is that Mr. Woo? Yeah, right. He peered at the passport photo in astonishment.
You don't look very Chinese, if I must say so.
It became apparent that as soon as I set foot in a foreign country, some form of explanation was required. After all, I'm white, with Chinese nationality, and that must have looked somewhat suspect. When I landed in JFK, after a long flight from Hong Kong on Cathay Pacific, a China Airways came in behind me. The queues to the immigration just went on, and a little Chinese guy behind me kept pushing me. He was only about 5'4", but he kept peering around me and pushing me and looking over my shoulder. I ignored it at first. I tried to ignore it. After a while, it started to irritate me. Eventually, I turned around and looked down at him. Would you stop doing that? It's not going to make it go any faster. He didn't take any notice of me. Maybe he didn't speak English. Anyway, by the time I got to the front of the queue and went to the immigration officer, I handed him my passport, half expecting a bollocking from him about me being Chinese. He looked at me, he looked at my passport. He looked across at the little man jumping up and down in the queue. He shook his head.
So you're Chinese?
Yes, I am, sir, I said, bracing myself.
Well, I think you made the wrong decision. Welcome to America. Bam! And I was in.
The Australian immigration, in their own fun way, would simply laugh and pass the document down the line to show their colleagues. Nathan, Shauna, look at this, the bloke's Chinese. Sorry, once again my accent comes out Cockney rather than Australian. They would guffaw and look across at me as if I was some sort of performing monkey. Unfortunately, not everyone was quite as friendly, Johannesburg being one. So, to prevent any further confusion, perhaps I should pause right here and introduce myself. What am I?
I am an African.
I'm a white African, 4 generations strong, but I'm also, rather confusingly, a first-generation white Chinese. I chose to renounce my Zimbabwean citizenship and take our Chinese nationality, mainly for the Hong Kong passport. But as I was soon to find out, in order to become a lawful Hong Konger, one must first become Chinese. A Chinese national, to be precise. Of course, there was another very good reason to ditch the passport of my birth. The Zimbabwe passport was virtually worthless. Travel restrictions made that green and gold document somewhat redundant, and travelling around the world became a major pain in the arse. The old Zimbabwe document required a visa for every conceivable country, except, I think, Malaysia, which is where President Mugabe and the First Lady went on their summer holidays to Langkawi. God, I was pissed off having to ditch the passport of my birth, but I felt I didn't have any choice. The trouble really all began when the Zimbabwe currency went into freefall. Oh, God, you know, we should have seen it coming. After all, inflation began back in the late 1990s, and that should have set alarm bells ringing. Of course, we all had our head in the sand. The real crash happened in 2008. And by then, it had become impossible to even measure. Zimbabweans began talking about millions, which soon turned into billions, then trillions. By the end of that year, inflation was loosely estimated at 76.6 billion percent. I'll reiterate that. 76.6 billion percent. No one knew what the extra zeros on the banknotes even meant. Gazillions, quadrillions, quintillions. Fortunately, I missed the worst of the crash, but by the end of that year, the US dollar was now equivalent to, and let me get this right, 2,621,984,228 Zim dollars and counting. Shame. People shuffled around the empty supermarkets, dazed and confused, like zombies from that TV series The Walking Dead. Little old ladies would lug an expandable Samsonite full of banknotes into a store and come away triumphant with a loaf of bread. And lavatory paper became more valuable than money. I mean, think about that. Adding to the expression, not worth the paper it's printed on. Of course, silver and copper coins disappeared overnight, and even the banknotes became obsolete, having been replaced by worthless bearer checks and agro checks, which the government just kept churning out. Nothing was backed by gold, of course. Ironically, what gold the country did have was probably stashed away safely in a Swiss bank account. And here's the thing. Passport pages became as rare as hen's teeth. Once the country had run out of money to buy passport paper, well, to be fair, the country had run out of money to buy anything at all. So with every page in my passport filled to the brim with exit, entry and visa stamps, I decided to return home in 2006 and get a new one on the black market at the cost of $120 US, or its equivalent at the time, 2.5 million Zimbabwe dollars. They were all in crisp banknotes, stuffed into a cardboard box and pushed surreptitiously under the table to a rather dodgy-looking character. The gentleman behind the desk knew immediately that we had the right amount of money. There was no counting of notes back then. We were into weighing their banknotes in bricks. He placed the carton on a set of scales, nodded briefly and slid it back under the desk. Job done. A man appeared out of the gloom and ushered us downstairs to our car. He slipped quietly into the back seat and ordered us to drive. Before long, we were being navigated down roads I'd never dared travel on in the past. We drove and we drove and we drove through the new blossoming shanty towns and past old rundown suburbs. Harare became a blip on the horizon. Fuel gauge was edging towards a quarter of a tank. My palms began to sweat. And the dark man in the back seat, shades on and mobile phone stuck to his ear, never spoke to me once, merely gesturing for us to go right, go left, go straight. Christ, I whispered to my mother, who was sitting next to me. We might be taken away and raped. She glanced at me and rolled her eyes. No such luck at my age. Finally, we reached an abandoned school that was buzzing with people, policemen, chickens, goats, piles of overripe guava and pawpaws for sale, and long, long queues. Ah, my heart sank when I saw the long lines, but thankfully, 2.5 million Zimbabwe dollars back then still had some clout. Look, I hate pushing in. It just seems so unfair. To be honest, I've always hated door bitches, the way they walk down the line, picking out the chosen few. It was never me. Still, on this day, I was secretly delighted to have our broody, undemonstrative gentleman friend at my side. People parted like the Red Sea, and we were led straight to the front of the queue, where, to my astonishment, we were confronted by the most enormous, pristine, whirring machine spitting out Zimbabwe ID cards and passport pages like an automatic poker dealer. "Who's it from?" I said. "It's a gift from Israel," the man said. Well, who was I to question this gift from the Tel Aviv Dizengoff Diamond Traders Company to our dear country? A jolly overweight man scanned my fingers, my thumbs, my face, and after a few minutes I went away, having been prodded and probed as the proud owner of not one, but two Zimbabwe ID cards. In case you lose one, the cherry operator said with a wink.
The next day, our shady dealer, mobile phone still stuck to his head, took me to the ominously pitch-black passport office near Harare Park. Honestly, if anyone has ever been there at the best of times, just wait until you see it at the worst of times. It was like a set from Hotel Rwanda. No electricity meant that old imperial typewriters could be heard clicking and clacking away in the candlelit gloom. Lines of bored people leaned against the walls, fanning themselves in the heat. Seriously, if the fetid body odor didn't knock you out, the low-hanging fixtures certainly would. But within hours, I miraculously skipped away with a shiny green Republic of Zimbabwe passport. Not bad for 2 days' work and $2.5 million. It was soon afterwards when working for the French news agency AFP, I went on a business trip to Tokyo. The Japanese immigration insisted that my document was false. Despite my protestations, not to mention my very valid visa stamp, they promptly put me into a room full of Nigerian and Ghanaian traders. Well, I should say traders in italics. Everyone seemed larger than life with deep baritone voices and brightly patterned garments. It was like being committed to an asylum full of African demi-Roussos lookalikes. I was the only white man, and I was the only man in a suit. The rest were attired in a colourful riot of tie-dyed Ghanaian fugus, kaftans, and, of course, obligatory sunglasses. And yet these loud, gregarious, confident Africans treated me as an African, and I loved it. Oddly, I felt part of something much bigger, something that ran deeper than mere skin colour. When I lived in what was then Rhodesia, I always felt strongly that my roots were firmly planted in Africa. I saw myself as African. I saw myself as Zimbabwean. Robert Mugabe, on the other hand, felt otherwise. Every white person became persona non grata. And so, very reluctantly, I decided to apply to become a Chinese national. Do you know, I felt cheated by Mugabe, angry. This was my birthright at stake. Still, it seemed better to be part of a very rich, corrupt regime rather than a very poor, corrupt regime. Feeling somewhat deflated after all the effort of getting a Zim passport on the black market, only to have it rejected, was kind of soul-destroying. So I marched into the Hong Kong Immigration Office demanding a Hong Kong passport. Demanding? I could never imagine demanding anything in Zimbabwe. In Zim, they would say, "Sir, you will just have to wait. There is no hurry in Africa." "I've been here for 15 years. I deserve a passport," I hollered at the officer. The young, handsome, and immaculately uniformed man behind the counter simply laughed. "But Mr. Wood," he said with utter bemusement, "you're not ethnic Chinese. You don't stand a hope in hell of being accepted." "Ethnic Chinese, ethnic Chinese," I barked. "I want to be a honky, not a Chinese. What does being ethnic Chinese have to do with it?" Having had my African ethnicity questioned constantly back home, indeed rammed down my throat on a daily basis, I was rather tired of the whole ethnic scene by now. "Well, you see," said the patient man, "now that Hong Kong is part of China, you need to become a Chinese national before you can even apply for a Hong Kong passport. And of course, you cannot become a Chinese national unless you are, well, an ethnic Chinese. Besides," he continued, "you need to conduct a second interview in a Chinese language of your own choice. I get the feeling that might be a problem." He sat back in his chair and smiled. I peered at his serenely handsome face. I took in his immaculate uniform, the pips on his shoulders, the manicured nails. My gaydar buzzed. And then slowly, as if in a dream, I slid my hand across the desk beneath the glass divider
and touched his hand. Summoning all my powers of seduction and a little prayer to Eros. Staring into his fathomless eyes, I told him straight out, "Did you know that you have a beautiful uniform?" Kaboom! The poor man fell apart. "Well, Mr. Wood, we do try." He was mine. "Oh, and Mr. Wood," he called through the glass partition at my retreating form. "Would you like to have lunch sometime?" Yes, I thought. I had won. Hallelujah. 10 days later, an officious letter stamped with the red star arrived from the motherland, congratulating me on becoming a Chinese national. No second interview ever took place. But I did have to write a letter to the motherland, explaining why I loved China. I wonder if that is archived somewhere. My less than rudimentary knowledge of Mandarin was never to be questioned. Thank God. I could only count to 5. I was always stumped on 6. The handsome man never called me back. Oh, and my new Chinese name was Mr. Wu. So there you have it. What am I? I'm a gay white Chinese who used to be a gay white African. Kind of fucked up, isn't it? Yet the story of my journey to Zimbabwe from Hong Kong began way before that with some diaries, the embossed gilded dates, 1975 to 1979, still barely visible along the spines. Tatty with old sellotaped cuttings and photos peeling away, many had onion skin pages slipping from their bindings, dried flowers from the farm and dog-eared tickets to a Lena Zavaroni or a 5,000 Volts concert would slip out and float to the floor. Languishing in a cardboard box aptly named Pete Wood's Life, they had more air miles than I could ever hope to earn. My old school friend had just completed 22 years as a Reuters war correspondent, and for reasons lost in the mists of time, Foxy had acquired the small, hermetically sealed box for safekeeping. Every time he decamped to a new bureau, the box travelled with him. Hong Kong, London, Brussels, Nairobi, Singapore, Jakarta, and now finally back to Hong Kong. By which time, Foxy had chucked out all the crap that had left the diaries. And he had scribbled on the label, Pete Wood's Diminishing Life. Around this time, I read an amusing yet poignant article by Kenyan journalist Aidan Hartley for The Spectator. How ironic that their legacy as a British diaspora across the Commonwealth of people who are rather confused about who they are. In Kenya, I'm a Muzungu. My family has been here since the 1920s, but I'm still what the Afrikaners call a salt dick, with 1 foot in Africa, 1 foot in Europe, and my tackle hanging down in the sea in between. Was I a salt dick, or maybe a rice dick, maybe a sweet and sour dick? God only knew where my tackle was hanging, but I needed to find out. And so, crown jewels tucked between my legs and Hong Kong passport in hand, I flew back to Africa, and it was with this thought in my mind that I stepped off the aircraft and walked across the hot tarmac, rippling in the mid-afternoon haze, to the brand new, unpaid-for, state-of-the-art, North Korean-built Harare International Terminal. The architecture, a hideous parody of the Great Zimbabwe ruins, the air traffic control tower loosely built to resemble the 15th century stone tower. Harare International Airport. A building even a mother couldn't love. The power was out. The conveyor belts at a standstill. I sighed with satisfaction. I was home. Well, that's about it. Thank you so much for listening to me. And remember, You can tune into my new episodes of Mud Between Your Toes via iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Blueberry, and Pocket Casts. Don't forget, you can always buy a copy of my book on both Amazon and Kindle. And I also welcome comments by email on mudbetweenyourtoes@gmail.com. If you want to get involved and you have a good story to tell about those years in Rhodesia, and if you're brave enough to be interviewed for Mud Between Your Toes, feel free to write to me. Goodbye.